Hi everyone, it's great to be here to talk about my recent work on the effects of anti-immigrant policies on perceived discrimination among Latinos in the U.S. And I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Edna Veruel Fuentes, who could not be here today, Katie Biello, Francisco Pedraza, and Suzanne Whitner, who is actually here in the audience. So just to give you some background on what we know about discrimination and health. So we do know that exposure to discrimination is a common feature of life for socially disadvantaged groups, including racial and ethnic minorities. A large body of literature has documented the noxious effects of discrimination on health and general well-being. The majority of this literature, however, has been conducted among African Americans, which has really left our understanding of discrimination faced by other racial ethnic minority in the U.S. kind of limited, specifically with regard to Latinos. And this has occurred despite the fact that Latinos are the largest racial ethnic minority group in the U.S., as well as evidence that discrimination is a chronic aspect of life for Latinos in the United States. So what we do know from research on discrimination and health, we know that African Americans report high rates of discrimination. Traditionally, they've reported higher rates than both whites and Latinos. But unlike African Americans, Latinos may experience discrimination among multiple axes, including nativity, national origin, legal status, as well as their language. And discrimination has been put forth as one of the potential explanations for the deterioration of Latino immigrant health that we see with increased time residing in the United States. But this has not been explicitly tested. As such, the role of discrimination in explaining Latino immigrant health patterns really remains unknown. In addition, disease is socially patterned. We know that, such that certain social groups are more or less likely to be affected by diseases than other groups are. Less, however, is known about the social patterning of risk factors such as discrimination for disease. Additionally, discrimination has been treated as a predictor rather than an outcome variable in and of itself. This has led to a limited understanding of factors that actually may predict discrimination. So while discrimination is produced and maintained at multiple levels, the majority of studies to date have examined this phenomenon at the individual level, which has left our understanding of how the larger social context affects discrimination quite fragmented. And scholars of immigrant health have long noted that the socio-political context in which immigrants arrive in the United States shapes opportunities for integration and well-being of not only the Latino immigrants, but their offspring as well. Government policies, which are part of the social political context in a country that may stigmatize or support immigrants, are an important facet of the social context, which warrants a further understanding, further examination. So since 2000, anti-immigrant policies have been introduced at the national, state, and local level. Arizona's 2010 State Bill 1070, which is probably the most kind of notorious anti-immigrant policy been put forth, which required state and local law enforcement to check the immigration status of anyone who they detained, pulled over for any reason. It also required that non-citizens carry their documentation status. So since Arizona State Bill 1070, dozens of states and county legislatures across the country introduced similar bills. And while the main target of these policies are undocumented immigrants, in practice, they affect all Latinos of, you know, all documentation statuses. And these anti-immigrant policies may function as an othering mechanism which marginalize, stigmatize, and exclude those being othered, so those who are deemed others, in this case, Latinos. despite, you know, this flurry of anti-immigrant policies that have been proposed as well as enacted, there really hasn't been a systematic examination of the effects of these policies on immigrant health. There have been a few studies that provide evidence that changes in health and healthcare use and social service use can happen as a consequence of the policy. These studies have also found that changes in healthcare use and social service use can happen even before enforcement, which points to the idea that enacted as well as proposed anti-immigrant policies have consequences for immigrants' well-being. One study conducted by Lauderdale and colleagues in 2006 found an increase in adverse birth outcomes among women with Arab or Muslim sounding given or surnames following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Those findings point to the idea that a hostile social environment created by anti-group policies and sentiment, in that case anti-Muslim sentiment, may affect health in part through perceived discrimination. The Lauderdale study, however, did not specifically test the mechanism and if discrimination was kind of the proposed mediator of that relationship. To that end, we had three study aims. The first aim was to examine the prevalence and correlates of perceived discrimination among a nationally representative sample of Latino adults in the United States. Our second aim was to investigate the effects of anti-immigrant policies on perceived discrimination, controlling for individual and state-level covariates, and to capture the most recent surge in anti-immigrant policies, which happened since 9/11 in 2001. And our final aim was to test whether the effects of anti-immigrant policies on perceived discrimination differed by individual characteristics, so specifically country of origin, generation status, documentation status, or gender. So to do this, to achieve our study aims, we merged two sources of data and conducted secondary data analysis. The first source of data came with survey data. It came from a nationally representative sample of 800 Latinos, which was conducted in May of 2003. That survey was called the National Latino Decisions Health Survey. It yielded individual level perceived discrimination, which was our outcome of interest, as well as all individual level covariates. Respondents of this survey were 18 plus years of age. They were self-identified Latinos living in the 50 United States. The survey was conducted via telephone, and it was conducted in either English or Spanish, depending upon the respondent's preference. The second data set we used, which was a state-level data set, contained a state-level anti-immigrant policy index, which was our main exposure of index. It measured anti-immigrant policies between the years 2005 and 2011 across the 50 United States. This state-level data set also contained state-level covariates from the United States Census data, and we merged these two data sources by participant state of residence. So our outcome of interest was perceived discrimination. We measured it with an adapted version of the Williams Everyday Discrimination Scale, which came out of the Detroit area study. The Williams Everyday Discrimination measure is one of the most widely used measures of discrimination. It has good psychometric properties and has been used with racial ethnic minorities both in the United States and in an international context. Respondents were asked to indicate how often they experienced any of eight discriminatory situations in daily life, and because the distribution of this variable was non-normal, we recoded it and modeled it dichotomously so that participants reported any versus no discrimination. Our exposure variable, again, was a state-level anti-immigrant policy measure. It was an index developed by Dr. James Monaghan, who is out of the University of Georgia, I believe. And it measured legislative output between the years 2005 and 2011 in the 50 United States with summaries of immigrant-related laws gathered by the National Conference of State Legislatures. Scores on this index were a ratio of anti-immigrant to pro-immigrant laws, with each law weighted on a 4-point scope scale, from 1 being symbolic, to 4 being directly affected immigrants' ability to reside in the states. We reverse-coded the measure, so positive values indicated more anti-immigrant policies, and negative values indicated more pro-immigrant policies. So the individual and state-level covariates we accounted for, the individual level were age, gender, marital status, education, income, country of origin, nativity and generation status, age arrived in the U.S., documentation status, and language preference. And all of those came from the survey data. The state level covariates we accounted for were percent foreign born in the state, percent high school graduate in the state, and percent poverty in the state. And those were included with our anti-immigrant policy index. And they were averaged across the 4 years from 2008 to 2012 to account for year-to-year fluctuations. Our statistical analysis included using univariate and bivariate analysis, both weighted and unweighted. We then fit 2-level hierarchical logistic regression models with a random intercept at the state level to account for clustering within states. And finally, we fit cross-level interaction terms between state anti-immigrant policies and various individual level variables to test for effect modification. So this table shows our bivariate relationships between various individual level covariates on the far left and the percent of participants who reported discrimination versus those who did not report discrimination. So you can see in yellow that overall almost 68.4% of participants reported that they had been discriminated against. We only saw significant differences in those who reported discrimination versus those who didn't by age, such that those of younger ages were more likely to report discrimination compared to those who were older. There were no differences across gender, marital status, education, or household income. This is the same table continuing on with different sociodemographic variables on the left. And you can see that there were differences in reporting discrimination by country of origin, such that Puerto Ricans reported higher levels of discrimination relative to other Latinos of other countries of origin. And there were differences by generation, such that third generation Latinos reported more discrimination relative to the other, to first and second generation Latinos. So this table shows our unadjusted and adjusted associations between anti-immigrant policies and perceived discrimination. Model 1 is just the crude model showing the effects of state anti-immigrant policy on perceived discrimination. And we see that the odds ratio is 1.28, so with an increased point on the anti-immigrant policy index, there was a 28% increase in the likelihood of reporting discrimination. Model 2 adjusted for all state-level covariates, and again, the association was positive and significant, but strengthened, such that a 1-unit increase in the immigrant policy index was associated with a 54% increase in odds of reporting discrimination. And Model 3 is adjusted for all individual and state-level covariates, and again, the association was positive and statistically significant, such that a 1-unit increase in the anti-immigrant policy index was associated with a 61% increase in the odds of reporting discrimination. So these graphs, hopefully you can see them, show the cross-level interactions between state anti-immigrant policies and individual factors. So on the x-axis are the predicted probability of reporting discrimination, and on the y-axis, you can see at the very bottom, it's the state anti-immigrant policy score going from a -2, which is more pro-immigrant, to a +2, which is more anti-immigrant. So the first graph shows the interaction by country of origin, and you can see that for Cubans, Mexicans, and other Latinos, at higher scores of anti-immigrant policy, with higher anti-immigrant policies, there are increased probability of reporting discrimination. In contrast, for Puerto Ricans, those living in states with with more anti-immigrant policies reported had a lower probability of reporting discrimination. The second graph shows the interaction by generation status, and what we see is that third generation immigrants are more likely to report discrimination compared to second and first generation immigrants. And then we looked at this interaction by gender, which was marginally significant at 0.09, and females are actually more likely to report discrimination in states with higher anti-immigrant policies relative to men, which was kind of surprising to us. So what did we find from this study? We found that the prevalence of discrimination was more than two times as high as the rate found in 2003 among a nationally representative sample of Latinos. That study was conducted by Perez and colleagues. And her rate of, the rate that she found was about, I think, 30-something, 33% reported discrimination. Ours was 68.4%. You know, there are many explanations for why the rate that we found was so much higher than the rate found by Perez in 2003. One might be that the measure we used, we both used the Williams Everyday Discrimination Scale. Ours was a bit different than the one she used. It's also possible that in that period, the 1,500 plus new immigrant-related laws, which were adopted by states, may have led to an environment that signaled to immigrants that they're members of a group that's not on equal footing with others, so that these policies really may have resulted in discriminatory experiences being more proximal in Latinos' day-to-day lives in 2013 than they were 10 years prior in 2003. And they may have been a result of the fact that discrimination has been more sanctioned by states in those 10 years since 2003. So the lack of differences in effects of anti-immigrant policies on discrimination by documentation status, we think, points to the unintended consequence of policies. So while these policies are really, you know, in theory targeted towards undocumented immigrants, they're clearly affecting Latinos of all documentation statuses. Some limitations of the study which weren't mentioned. So the anti-immigrant policies were measured 2 years prior to the measurement of perceived discrimination. So discrimination was measured in 2013. We measured the anti-immigrant policies between 2005 and 2011. So it's possible that policies changed in those 2 years between 2011 and in 2013. We think what's more likely is that the anti-immigrant policy index is actually a measure of more general anti-immigrant sentiment. It's picking up, which would not have changed in 2 years. And it's really kind of picking up on this just kind of global barometer of anti-immigrant sentiment in the states. We also used a single subjective measure of perceived discrimination. However, this measure has been correlated with objective measures of discrimination, so we feel pretty confident in the use of the measure despite it being a single subjective measure. There's always the possibility of unmeasured confounders at the individual and state level. We're doing secondary data analysis. We had limited, therefore, no control over kind of the covariates we accounted for. We think we kind of covered the most likely variables, but there may be some unmeasured confounding that's going on. So what can we conclude? What can we take away from this study? So there have been calls for further understanding of the ramifications of anti-immigrant policies. They've been called, you know, draconian, but really few studies have systematically documented their effects on immigrants and Latinos in particular. So ours is the first study to use a nationally representative sample of Latinos to investigate the effect of anti-immigrant policies on a fundamental determinant of health, which is discrimination. Findings provide evidence that the social context, so in other words, state-level anti-immigrant policies can affect perceptions of discrimination and inferentially may affect Latinos' health and help explain patterns of Latino health. And an understanding of the health implications of non-health policies, such as immigrant policies, really does offer us an opportunity to identify health-promoting equitable legislation going forward. So thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions either now, or I think we're going to take questions after the other presenters.